welcome to this week's episode of the No Skips podcast. I am Lisa.
I'm Jack.
And we are covering Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly.
We know we're 2 days late, but honestly, we could spend another semester on this one and still not get it.
Correct. Yeah, we were only delayed because life, and also the album was so dense that even though I was pushing so hard to be ready on Tuesday, I was like, I don't got it, Cap'n.
And here's the thing. This is one of these things where the big albums in hip hop tend to weigh in at 60 plus minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And as I commented to you, a good rap song can get in what? At least four times, really, the sort of the amount of lyrical content
Correct.
In the song.
Well, coming on the heels of Madonna.
Right.
Where it was like, okay, this wasn't you. Slam dunk. A, the album sucked, and B, the lyrics were very simple.
Right.
Cherish. Okay. That's very sweet. Have you heard You by Kendrick Lamar? You haven't. Have a seat.
Hey, Madonna from 1989, you big dumb idiot. Try the future. It's Kendrick Lamar.
Have you ever tried the future, Madonna?
Hey, you should try it.
You tried.
Probably has.
You should stop trying the future. we saw what came after Cherish.
We've seen.
We didn't want it. So this is, let me scroll up to my notes. This is his third studio album. It dropped on March 15th, 2015.
Third studio album. It's funny because a lot of the ones we've covered on this show have often been thirds, fourths, often fifths, but like this feels like such an enormous album to be his third.
Correct. How do you come out swinging like this with number three?
I mean, part of it is by intent, right? By intention,
yeah.
By very, very working very hard and then intending to hit mm-hmm. on this level, and that's what it does. We'll start with the cover. I think in very clear ways, it not only lyrically, sonically, statement-wise, but also on the cover, it makes me think of Outkast's Stankonia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a big, bold, and to some eyes, provocative statement about America, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being black in America. And again, we're two white people. We're not trying to, you know, comment anything other than as people who love music. Obviously, we have no access to the black experience, you know, in our own lives, but a great artist universalizes things in wonderful ways, and
mm-hmm.
so music's a language for everyone. Mm-hmm. So that's we're not trying to come in and say, oh,
right, we know our place here.
I hope someone really is just waiting with bated breath on our thoughts on To Pimp a Butterfly. Obviously, we don't know. Shit from shit on this one. This is out of appreciation purely. So
exactly.
Well,
that's a good preface. Thank you for that. Production from Soundwave, Terrace Martin, Taz, Tizza, Arnold, Thundercat.
Oh yeah.
Racky, Love Dragon, Flylo, Pharrell Williams, Boy Wanda, Knowledge, whose name I hadn't heard in a long time.
Knowledge has some. If you love some good beats, look up his own solo work.
It's fantastic.
Really, really good stuff.
That was like, what, early 2010s for us?
Yeah, although I think he's been pretty steady
I'm the one who fell off.
Yeah, exactly.
So lots of really intense themes to this album.
Yeah.
To say the least. That's putting it mildly.
Right.
To say you've got, he went on a tour of historic sites when he visited Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a huge theme there. But then there's also the focus on his own self-worth, depression.
Fame, money,
exactly. Yeah. Racial inequality, police brutality, et cetera. You name it,
yeah,
it was
kind
covered.
Of wrestles with it.
Yeah, it was covered here.
But another thing that makes me think of Stankonia, right? It's like right out of the gate with Gasoline Dreams, right? If America doesn't want us, where will we go? You know, there is that connection of reckoning of the black experience vis-a-vis the African experience, which is a distinct thing, and yet, you know, there are still undeniable connections there. And so it's incredibly fraught, and it takes an album like this, very, very dense album,
mm-hmm.
to continue to plumb and explore some of these things in really interesting ways.
Correct. This was so some stuff about behind the scenes for the maybe not behind the scenes, but notes about the album. It hit number one on the Billboard 200 and won Best Rap Album at the 2016 Grammys, and got a nomination for Album of the Year, and it lost. I remember this. It lost to Taylor Swift's 1989. That's some real bullshit.
Which, again, for its weight class, 1989 is an excellent pop gem.
Is it? I've never listened to
it. It's good.
That's not what this is.
Yeah, solid album. It's not. I don't think that's fair. Because both in like the how big the songs are, but also in terms of import, basically in almost every characteristic other than non-rapping pop song craft.
Right.
This album beats that. But hey, award shows are almost always wrong. You look back on award shows on any year. But
correct.
But this is but 6 years ago, by the way. Can we talk about how we're old balls and that's already Pimp a Butterfly? It's like this is how you get stuck in time and you get old. You're like, oh, this album's what, two? Was that 4 months ago to Pimp a Butterfly?
Yeah.
No?
Came out in January. rough 2020. No wonder he dropped this album. Oh no. No, this, that's exactly what's happening here. In 2020, it hit the number 19 position on Rolling Stone's 500 greatest albums of all time.
Nice. They mostly talk out of their ass, and like most music critics are useless, but I appreciate the
for it to be 19 of 500. That's saying a lot of all time.
Yeah,
of all time. That's pretty good. Lamar himself described the album as a quote unquote as an honest, fearful, and unapologetic work.
Here I'm going to touch back to one of your favorites, Tame Impala, where he talked about how the more honest he was about something that was very specific and personal to him, the more universal it seemed to strike people.
Isn't that interesting?
And I think you have that here because it's like, or I mean, even to look back on Beyonce with Lemonade, right? It's like, I've never been that. I've never been married to Jay-Z and dealt with the infidelity on this very weirdly public way. And yet, I feel like I'm connecting to that experience somehow with the power of your music. And so Lamar does something very similar and actually very, I think, in some ways more powerfully because of how raw he is.
Extremely raw.
So much
excessively honest. Yeah. It's a very heavy album.
Yeah.
When I first listened to it, even before we finished Madonna, I was already done with Madonna and I was like, I'm already listening to this album.
Yep.
I was out skis on that and I was already listening to this and I was like, this is good. This is okay. This is good. And then we hit a certain track in the middle. I'm like, what just happened here? this took to a place I have not heard.
Sure.
So
yeah.
Without further ado, should we get started? Because the album is over an hour long. I'm asking that we not hit a full hour just for my own stamina. But I mean, I've listened to this album nonstop for the better part of a week, and it's taken all week and then some, I should say, and it's still taking a lot of time to digest.
Yeah, and this is exactly. This is not going to be authoritative by any means. This is more sort of impressionistic of spending time again. I have spent more time with this album more when it came out, but still, like, I agree. I haven't spent enough time to really get to know it.
I don't recall any of these. I don't even know what would have been a hit on this album because I don't remember any of these making radio play.
Yeah. Well, do you listen to the radio a lot?
In 2000, yeah, I do. I mean, like when I'm driving to and from, I mean, now I do. In 2015, 2016, we were in Kansas. I couldn't have told you what station got me to this music there. So I kind of just avoided the radio. I think I avoided the radio.
Yeah, probably wouldn't have.
So I probably missed that.
So I was the lead-off single. And so it was really a statement.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was a statement piece. But it's a different mix than the album.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, great.
Well, there it is.
Neat. So we start off track one, Wesley's Theory, which features George Clinton and Thundercat. Obviously,
it's
Thundercat's amazing, by the way. If you don't know who Thundercat is, A, you've been under a rock, and B, Thundercat's amazing.
Yes, Thundercat is had really carved up his own unique niche, and
I love it.
We celebrate him. Yeah, for a while, at a certain point, I was like, oh man, this is a cool jazz influence on some of the Flylo stuff, and then later it's like, okay, that's a lot of bass guitar, you can stop now. And then you kind of get into it more, and then he got into his solo work and he's with other artists, and it's just like, if you're hearing some great bass playing in a jazz or hip hop or like funk related record, mm-hmm. it's a good chance it might be Thundercat.
Correct.
He's great.
And, he's amazing.
Check out Do-Rag if you haven't heard a Thundercat mm-hmm. track. That one is a pure joy. Just mm-hmm. pure joy.
It's so fantastic. It gets a lot of radio play these days.
Yeah. Good
which
for
is
him.
Fantastic. So yeah, the Thundercat Fly Low influence here is undeniable.
Yeah.
I love Fly Low being Flying Lotus.
And George Clinton
and
being George
Clinton,
Clinton,
of course. Right. Right. So this track is, it comes out swinging.
Yep.
This is such a fun, wild, like, introduction. And then,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Talking about how rich a black man can get so quickly and how quickly it can be taken from them as well. So what I read online was that for the Wesley bit, but even in the lyrics itself, but it was a nod to Wesley Snipes. So Snipes somehow doesn't seem like the right last name, even though I know it is Wesley Snipes.
Right.
I just never say it, so it doesn't
right,
sound right right now.
Because he was one of the most prominent cases of being jailed for tax evasion.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it's, again, to my mind runs to Outkast Dankonia in terms of where there's no beating around the bush.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
Let's
right?
do this. Yeah.
Being black in America, go. And that's like, and so yeah. I think that's what's amazing about how thoroughly this album spends time sort of examining it and thinking about it, both from an interior perspective, you know, his difficulties with fame mm-hmm. and money and the lure of being very showy with your money. And also, I mean, again, the third album, right, to go from sort of the meteoric rise to get the thing that, you know, living, have a tough upbringing on the West Coast and then make it mm-hmm. by all accounts. And you say, now what? Right.
Right.
And then to have to question all the things that you were driving at this whole time. And that's how you get this album,
mm-hmm.
which we'll stop for a moment, even though at the end we'll get to Tupac. This album was originally titled To Pimp a Caterpillar, which spells out Tupac.
That's
spoilers.
That's rad.
Yeah. And then it changed from, and the caterpillar caterpillar butterfly imagery is in the last track, mm-hmm. but he ultimately changed it to Pimp a Butterfly to better reflect the themes of self-growth and development. So
interesting. Thank yeah. you. I never in all the reading, I never saw that anywhere.
It's
That's
cool.
rad.
Yeah. Super cool.
So Wesley's theory, again, it talks about how hard it is for, like you said, this meteoric rise of fame, wealth, and everything like that. But then in America, they for young black men, you are not taught what to do when things like this come up.
Right.
There's no groundwork for something like this. And then when it does happen, you are enticed to spin, and
right.
then you lose it all.
Right.
Or,
be part of the system.
Yeah.
Right? Be another
Uncle
part
Sam.
Of it. Yeah, exactly. Uncle Sam. The recurring characters throughout this drama, and it is very dramatic. There's mm-hmm. Part of what I love is the poem that is finally read in complete, in full, at the end of the album, keeps getting repeated interstitially between songs, but
right.
only in little snippets, and it creates a very cinematic rhythm in terms of like seeing a flash, right? Seeing a flash of a memory or being presented an image
mm-hmm.
fractionally, and then you say, "What was that? Interesting." And then it's presented to you again, slightly longer, and you go, "Okay, well, what's that about?" And then when it finally gets there, you're like, "Ah!" Oh. Not only does this album have an incredible sort of uprise, it's very similar to a lot of the very powerful albums that we've covered. They often sequence some of the biggest songs last, which is cool because that can, you know, it defies the conventional wisdom of like put all your heavy hitters up front and then let it all sort of drift away so that you're just kind of snoozing and then you're kind of like, oh, whatever.
Right.
And by the time you get to the last part of the album, you're just like, oh, whatever. And but big statement albums like this are, I mean, it's the reason why we do this show, right? It's as an album. Yeah, mm-hmm. there are some great songs in here. You would enjoy hearing those songs. But the cumulative power of talking again. Sorry, I did a tangent on what we're talking about. Lucy and Uncle Sam, right?
Right.
Lucy as in Lucifer, mm-hmm. devil. And Uncle Sam, of course, is a personification of not just the U.S. government, but also institutionalized systems of racism and inequality,
right.
as practiced and continues to be practiced in America
mm-hmm.
throughout its whole history.
Exactly. For Free, track two. This is, Kendrick Lamar has said this was his favorite track on the album, which is really funny. It starts off with like a jazz chorus sounding intro.
That's so much fun.
Yeah, and then it has like a mix of like a vicious voicemail style from a woman basically calling him low rent, bullshit, etc.
Right.
Which I remember was that Hypnotize. Oh my gosh, Lisa, Ready to Die.
Mm.
I feel it had some of this kind of taste.
Had some of that energy, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it yeah, the jazzy. I remember, I think the first time I listened to this album, I remember just kind of just being bewildered. It was like, can he do this? Can you do that? Can you like get into this wildly jazz inflected kind of mood on yeah. this big of an album?
And then drop "This Dick Ain't Free" over and over again. It's like, yeah. So again, for me, the hardest part of listening to this album without paying attention to track changes is that I have no idea. In listening to this, it feels like there are 57 tracks on this album.
Oh, yeah. No,
it
is.
There are 16. Because even in For Free, which is considered an interlude, feels like three or four different songs.
Right. And that's what you have. Again, I think when guys are like this and they have so, like, there are so many ideas mm-hmm. in a single track. Like mm-hmm. you say, it does feel like when you're not paying attention to just the track listing, it does feel like, again, like a movie where it's like each scene, right? Here's mm-hmm. an idea. Here's a scene. Here's a little story. And we're going to swip it.
I think I read somewhere that come on the heels of his trip from Africa that he returned with like two or three albums worth of ideas and concepts.
Sure,
like, yeah, no
like
shit
it.
I can hear it. Yeah. And you did an amazing job. So For Free is essentially because for women a lot of times they're like, well, you got to pay to get in these pants, you got to do
right.
this, you got to do that. Him being like, also, by the way, flip it. What makes you think there's no value in anything I have to offer and whatnot?
Which is the surface level read, right? It's like men and women.
Right.
But that's what's fun is it plays on the surface, but also works in terms of like him, his sense of self-worth to record company, his sense of self-worth as a black man, mm-hmm. which is, of course, you know, in this country is difficult. As with so much of this album, the material is read several different ways, mm-hmm. which is it gives a lot of depth. And again, it's not like it's a lecture. It's a very fun, funny, jazzy track.
100%. King Kunta.
One of the first, not one of the first. Obviously, the whole album slaps, but this beat, you're gonna if you're not sitting up and paying attention to this beat, you're dead.
What's so funny is that the album starts off with so much energy, Wesley's Theory, For Free,
right.
then this one, and then you don't really know what's coming.
Yeah.
So this sets you up for a little bit of a false start to be like, oh yeah, we're doing this thing. It's like, bitch, you thought
yeah.
we're doing something else later.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
This is
yeah.
the intro to the party. But that works in the thematic scheme.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. King Kunta fucking rules.
Yeah. And it's fun because this is, of course, a reference to Kunta Kinte from Roots
mm-hmm.
and fun isn't the right word. It's a glimpse into that process to just pick up and examine and talk about these sort of characters as synecdoches for various problems, various thoughts. You can, it's like looking at facets of a diamond, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a really compact way to talk about huge. I mean, and it's not like he's at a loss for words. These are very dense lyrical passages,
mm-hmm.
and yet thematically and so on, there's just a lot of resonance. It's like, so we could spend this whole show talking about this song. It's great. I want to say it was one of the singles, but I could be wrong.
That would be wild to hear this on the radio. It may have been. For some reason, I didn't look up the single on this one. There was so much other research to do the singles.
Right. And we're not about singles. We're about this is
correct.
An album. And this is definitely an album.
So Institutionalize is next.
Go on.
No, you go ahead.
So, I mean, same thing. He explores the different meanings of the word, right?
Correct.
A surface level of saying institutionalized in terms of, you know, it has a connotation of mental instability, but mm-hmm. also, of course, he's saying in terms of institutionalized racism.
Correct.
These the various structures and ways that the system is set up to make sure Black people don't get ahead.
Right. Those almost verbatim the notes I had for this song, so I don't have anything else to add. But yeah, that's exactly what it is. Snoop's on this track.
A sparing, in my mind, a sparing vocal cameo. Right?
Isn't this like, one where he's dropping like your 5 foot something out of Compton? Is this that track?
I can't remember.
I'm pretty sure it's this track because I don't know if I would have called out Snoop otherwise. Mm. I feel like that was the one.
It's
whatever
neat,
the case
it's
is.
It's neat
yeah.
just because Snoop, I mean, Snoop will guest on so much. I'm gonna reach for comparison, but here Snoop feels like a Tarantino casting to me, which means because Snoop showed up on what, like Katy Perry? He showed up. He
what?
Showed, I'm reaching here. I'm not sure if he's actually showed up on a Katy Perry track, but he's. But
probably
he's he's guested on a lot of pop stuff, like pure pop.
Right.
Right. Even though he's a West Coast legend, he's been in not what you'd call, you know, oh my gosh, this is, you know, Snoop the King kind of appearances in pop music. That's not the Snoop that shows up because of context and the kind of album this is. You're hearing Snoop as Lamar is referencing him, because mm-hmm. Lamar is spending a lot of time, and I think as this album, of course, ends up with this final invocation of Tupac, it's not wrong. And that's the craziest kind of thing to say, I'm going to go through all of this very harrowing kind of self-inventory. I'm going to think about fame, about Blackness in America. I'm going to talk about all this. Also, I'm going to go ahead and put myself in this line of leaders, including both musically, but also sort of like just culturally, like that takes a lot.
Yes.
It takes a lot. And it's just, but it's neat because that's the Tarantino comparison to me, is that Tarantino so loved his actors that people hadn't paid attention to in years. John Travolta being one of them before he was cast in Pulp Fiction. His career was dead in the water, but Tarantino loved him so much and he put him in his movie, and it's like you see him through Tarantino's eyes. I love hearing Snoop Dogg in this track because you, like, at least to me, it was saying, oh, that's Snoop Dogg,
mm-hmm.
right? That's Snoop Dogg, not just the Snoop Dogg of latter day. We're reaching all the way back through. And I think that's something you see with the invocation of generations. It happens later, but Ronald Isley, as of guesting on this album for I, was 75 years old. Because it's the Isley Brothers, mm-hmm. That Lady. It wasn't a sample. Even though they had it cleared as a sample, they actually replayed. So it wasn't truly a sample. They just had to clear the rights anyway. But he took a trip to St. Louis to personally ask Ronald Isley for rights to sample That Lady. And it's just, so it's just, you're like on the album. How else can you make it that concrete of saying I'm aligning myself and talking about, and I'm in conversation with decades of Black leadership, than to just have them on the album?
Right.
Here are the awesome current Black musicians, producers, Pharrell, Flylo, Thundercat, and here's Ronald Isley. Here's George Clinton.
You're right.
What else do you
right?
What else do you want, man?
You name him, he's got him. You got it. These walls. Hey-o.
We talk about it extending a metaphor.
Correct.
Lots of walls we're talking
Lots
about.
Lots of walls. Vagina walls.
Yeah, I remember hearing that. I didn't catch it on the first listen. A good Catholic boy that I am. It's like, this song sounds very sexual in nature. Moving on.
Come back to it. Right.
But yes.
Yes. Walls being?
Vaginal walls.
Vaginal walls.
Cell walls.
Jail cell walls.
Yeah.
Jail
Jail cell?
Jail cell walls. Did I do it right? If I were to say jail cell. Jail cell.
Uh-oh.
I hate Texas.
Did they fail to seal the well? These are power phrases.
Failed to seal the well. I did it right?
You did it right. Jail cell walls.
Jail cell walls. That's the tongue twister for Texans.
Wow.
Yes. So yeah, it's a good track. It's a good track, but it's, I don't know. It's not the strongest one on the album. That's for sure. To my opinion. How could you say there's the strongest one? Really?
Right. I like the contrast. It's another, because again, the album is extraordinarily varied. Like you say, he's bursting with ideas.
Also, there are zero tree fingers on here for me. I can't think of a single one that I was like, I would skip that. No.
Fair enough.
Not a single one, which is unusual for me. We are now on the track You.
This
is the heavy
piece. I have trouble with the drunk vocal. I have a lot of trouble with that. It's just this side of too theatrical that it's just like it really takes me out of this track. So not that it's a tree fingers, it's just that it limits my ability to really enjoy, because like I said, I'm impressed, and that's something I started to pick up on more where we were covering Biggie, where like when Biggie, you know, raps so distinctly in two different voices that it sounds like a different rapper.
Right.
And so he, like, Lamar's kind of doing that, but I don't. Accent work, man. Dicey stuff. If you don't stick the landing, I think it'd be dicey. And I would say the only sort of artistic choice that doesn't land for me is the second half of this track. I'm glad he went there, because this album wouldn't have the breadth and the depth that it does without going for it. And he goes for it. Apparently, this was a very, very difficult and personal, like writing lyrics in the booth and then recording with the lights out.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Well, you can feel it.
It's a powerful place.
I think something as dark as I think. Well, let me say this, and then we'll step back. With as dark as a song can get, I think that you need to be able to let loose without anybody seeing you, without you seeing them.
It makes sense to me. You need to have
it out. You need to face those demons in the dark. So he starts in, so he's got the first part of the track is the, like, the loving you is complicated.
Yeah.
Loving you is complicated. I can't do it. Yeah. And then it goes into the kind of exasperated rapping that you're talking about. This is the whole poem that we've heard today at this point, a little bit in clips is, lost my mind in a hotel room or something like that, or whatever it was. Well, this is that.
Yeah.
This is what this was. So, So the situation there, he was on tour with, was it Kanye?
I don't know.
I think he was on tour with Kanye, and he just had a breakdown.
Yeah.
And I think he kind of had to hold himself up. I believe it was because the death of one of his friends back home in Compton occurred. And then in a lot of the album, you're hearing him grappling with the difficulties of having succeeded.
Right.
You know, being happy
now
for
what,
that.
Right?
But then the backlash, right? Yeah. So the first demon he battles in the second part of the song is how could he be there for and reach so many people through his lyrics and his music, but not be able to reach his sister.
Wow.
And I think she got pregnant as a teenager. Okay. That was rough. He was upset about that one. He's battling himself and how much he hates himself for the way things went down in his life.
Sure.
Then we get to verse 2 where you can hear like the hysterical nature.
Yeah.
Of his rapping. He's totally, I mean, you can hear it. He's been crying for a while. You don't hear that. You hear that just a few times in someone's life, typically.
Right. And that to be a texture in an album like this is crazy.
Yeah. I think I've only reached it a couple of times in my life to date at 36. Oh. So it's rough to hear someone else get there.
Get there and do it. Yeah. Do it on mic. Right.
Right. He's mad at himself for leaving Compton. And seemingly like a selfish act on his part to leave his friends and family behind to go make it big. And then the point here is where a friend of his died from a gunshot. I think it was like after multiple surgeries, they thought he was going to make it. And then he was beating himself up because I think all he did was FaceTime him.
Oof.
And you know, feeling like a real asshole for not doing more. I think there's lines like even God saying you fucked it up or you fucking failed or something like that. It's rough. Yeah, and then in the third verse, he's talking to himself about how much of a piece of shit he thinks he is, kind of touching on the fact that, you know, touching the idea that he may have bipolar disorder, and drinking's taking hold of his life. I love this line, even though it's very sad. I love it. Faults break into pieces, earthquakes on every weekend because you shook as soon as you knew confinement was needed.
Ooh.
It's a really rough line. Anyway, You is just a tremendously powerful track. I understand what you're saying. Because right. Whenever he does the, you know, the drink and the bottles clanking, that is a little,
it's
a little much.
I'm okay with the Foley. It's just the vocal, the theatricality of the vocal is just, I can't.
See, but I don't find it theatrical. I find it 100% real.
To me, it just sounds like a character. It sounds like a.
It does not sound that way to me. I know that he had to get it in a studio,
right?
Because this wasn't him just recording himself in the hotel room,
right?
But it's. I mean, he got there. Again, you don't get those vocals without. Those are real, in my opinion. Those are very real. So when this gave me tremendous pause when I heard it for the first time, that made me be like, okay, this is a different album altogether.
I hear that.
So You is kind of where the album starts to calve a little bit, I would say. But then it gets a little more upbeat with the next track, which is All Right, which in my opinion is my favorite track on the album.
Yeah. And the 1-2 of that, I really keyed it in on the downward spiral, but so many of the albums that we've covered do a similar trick of getting into a dark place, getting into a dissonance, sometimes either a harsh, like here, it's a very harsh vocal.
You're right.
And it's a dark place thematically, sonically, everything. And then you come out, and to come up and out with such a big positive track, with the, because that's a great track. That's a great track all by its lonesome.
Right.
But to come hitting that after such a low, it pushes it up even higher. Correct. It's just incredible.
Yeah, this was the one that I actually heard.
This is the Pharrell beat, yeah.
Yeah, this is the one I heard randomly. YouTube was just like, you want to hear this, right? And I was like, I don't know what this is.
Maybe.
And then I heard, I was like, this is amazing. And then I saw it was on the Pimp Butterfly. I was like, there it is. That's what we're doing. So, yep, in this track, he's kind of just being like, everything can be terrible, but as long as you put your love and trust in God and just kind of accept it, it's going to be all right.
Yeah.
So a much more uplifting message than the previous song. I love All Right. It's fantastic. Yeah. I highly recommend, if you don't listen to the album, put this track
Huge standout track from the album.
I've been singing it all week. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't want to hear me walk around singing All Right by Kendrick Lamar?
Again, the powerful, universalizing joy of music.
And we hate Popo.
We don't have to go there.
I don't like the Popo.
You don't?
I do not like the Popo.
I'm just saying, we don't have to quote it.
I do have to quote it. For sale? ?
Another great sort of, you know, in pairs, the for free.
For sale.
For sale. Mm-hmm. There are different things that the different questions and answers, right? Call and responses throughout the album that I think also puts it above a lot of even like well considered material. This is like a step higher in my mind. There's not, despite how long it is, and there's not a lot of fat.
Correct.
On the album. So
somehow
exactly.
Somehow
so,
there's not.
Well, it's so stuffed with ideas.
It just I was just like, I've listened to this album all the way through. I was like, no, there are like two or three songs you haven't actually
right.
Yeah, you've gotten sat close with, to, but yeah. They've happened like once. To get to the end is a feat.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way. Right. It just takes a lot of time.
Yeah,
Mama. So coming home in this song took on a few meanings for me, quite literally just coming home back to Compton
right.
to be with people and family that you've left behind or that he left behind right. could also mean like coming home, like getting more grounded after this launch into fame.
Yes.
And extravagance and whatnot. Or as we touched on earlier, home, Africa.
Africa, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. A lot of deep possible ways to interpret that. And they all seem to track.
It's fantastic. Every song is a 7-layer burrito.
Mm-hmm.
You have to work through.
Oh yeah. No, Mama's cool.
Mama is cool.
And this is a Knowledge and Taz Arnold production.
Thank you, Knowledge. Thank you, Taz Arnold.
Yeah, yeah.
Hood Politics.
Boo boo.
I like this one.
Had never heard that phrase.
Boo boo.
I know everyone's like shock horror.
Whoa.
This
whoa,
is
whoa.
Suburban Texan man.
I was mowing the lawn on Saturday, Sunday, okay. Saturday. And I was listening to this track and I thought I thought this was in my head. This belonged on a different album. So yeah. I was just like, this one's on this one. The boo boo. It just seems so silly, but it is so great.
Right.
In its own way. But I love how weirdly.
Right. Again, the playfulness to the idea to play with the different deliveries, uh-huh. different kind of attitudes as well as different backing tracks. This is it is a lot of fun.
There are some celebrities, some singers, some artists that I would have no issue meeting in person. Mm-hmm. I would have a very difficult time actually just being in the same room with Kendrick Lamar.
You feel like there's a great deal of intensity just being in the same room, and you're like,
right.
like standing too close to a heater. You just be like, ah, ha, 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 ha.
Exactly.
I'm uncomfortable. Oh, excuse me. Oh, sorry, sir.
Sorry.
Oh,
sorry, I breathe. Exactly. Just spitting out into space.
It's okay. Oh, I'm so sorry. And yeah, you've now spilled your water on him.
I love you, Kendrick Lamar.
I will never spill that water on you.
I will never. Please. I would have to be within water spilling distance of you, but that will never happen.
It will never happen. I will make sure it never happens.
Please. This one also starts with kind of a antagonistic voicemail from a friend. It sounds like kind of calling him out for his attire,
right.
how he's been dressing,
right.
what he's been doing. And just, I mean, it must get so old to be ridiculed for the way that you used to be and how you are
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
And
right. Same kind of thing, right? It's just as much of, hey, I made it. Wait, what does that mean? Have I lost? Because like we talk about rock and roll, hip hop, authenticity is a mm-hmm. very big part of that expression. So if you can say that I've left where I came from, have I forgotten myself? Have I forgotten my friends? Have I forgotten what it's like?
Right.
And he plays with a lot of those, you know, kind of perspectives on this album.
Mm-hmm. When I was listening to this track kind of out and about, because I was thinking again about the Taylor Swift loss, which mm-hmm. makes me so mad. But I was thinking about it in regards to this song, and I was like, the difference between someone like Taylor Swift's upbringing to where she ends up, I'm not saying that most musicians start off in, you know, like a good middle class family, you know, suburban
sure.
home, and then make it big and like, whoa, you have all these like Britney Spears era sure. kid video home videos of that. And it's like people, especially rappers, don't start there.
Right.
So this is insane rise to something that just blows past anything you could possibly imagine. Must be even harder to for your friends, family, everyone to grapple with.
Yeah. Right, because yeah. I think it's already pretty abstract, even from a comfortable middle class background.
Yeah.
So yeah, exactly. It must seem like you might as well live on the moon if it happens to a disadvantaged family.
Yeah.
Or,
it was just thinking about that. I was like, I think all musicians go through this crazy metamorphosis, and I was like, it's even wilder for some.
Yeah.
Yeah. Taylor Absolutely. Swift, I don't know what your upbringing was. I don't care what your upbringing was, but I care about Kendrick Lamar. I want to know more about that.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. How much a dollar cost?
One of the most beautifully produced tracks on the album. Really like,
yes.
This is a very, to me, this is a very Roots beat.
Yes. Was this the one that came in the, yes. Oh, this is the one that I noted at the beginning before it really starts. It almost sounds like a pyramid song.
Yes.
Track.
Yeah. The way the percussion and yes, it's a very lush track.
Pyramid
yeah.
Song being a track by Radiohead
uh-huh.
for anyone not aware. So it's about a.
But these two people stop talking about fucking Radiohead.
We're
talking about Kendrick Lamar. They got to keep bringing up fucking Radiohead.
I heard Idiocheck on the radio yesterday. Thank you, KUTX. Story about a man outside of a gas station asking for a dollar. Kendrick
in South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or I should say, was it 10 Rand?
Yeah, I would say I have to look that one up. 10 Rand, which is, yeah.
I think I saw it was like a dollar or like a dollar 50
yeah,
or something like that. Whatever the case is, it's a hard track because he's battling with the emotions of being like, I don't want to help you. I know this is not going to help you. And then
right.
kind
this
of
going into your arm
and,
or going into booze. You know?
Right, right. What was the line? I smell grandpa's old medicine reeking from your skin.
Woo!
That's rough. But of course, at the end, he's choosing not to give him the money. it's a whole to-do. He's feeling tremendously guilty, but also kind of proud to be like, I'm not helping you with this. I'm not helping you do this, but also it's beating him up. And then at the end, it's the man reveals himself to be God.
Right.
And the cost of him not having given him the 10 rand was his place in heaven. Mm-hmm. That was what it really cost. So
right, which is a fresh spin on an old parable that hits especially hard, I think, in the it's so well evoked. Again, it's painfully self-searching in terms of the fearless moral inventory of Kendrick Lamar here, I think is what really makes this track powerful. That and again, I think it's a beautifully produced track. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Next one is Complexion.
Yeah, just how the pecking order. Again, we are not black. We do not have any experience of what it is to be black. But that in microcosm, every aspect of human experience, we're a cruel species, and in any given set, we recreate inequalities within that set. So, I'll tell people, you know, we just. Anything, right? In a given high school, right? In a given high school setting, in a given friend group, even, you know, someone's at the top, someone's at the bottom. And so here's Kendrick talking about how harmful it is that, and the deep sort of racist history about grading blackness, the content of melanin in your skin as your self-worth or how attractive you are, mm-hmm. is just so destroying. It's like things aren't hard enough, right?
Right.
So simple. It's simple, yeah. I feel like it's a testament to him that for what is essentially a kind of a statement song goes over pretty smoothly, just because he handles things so well. Because I think there's a lot of artists where it's just like, once you get into like, here's a serious issue, right? I always laugh because I think about A Mighty Wind, the mm-hmm. The mockumentary of, there's a folk group that is, they have a bunch of their silly folk 60s, you know, fake albums. Then they all have a naming scheme that's like picking and like strutting or like walking. And then there's the statement album that's called Saying Something, and they're really dour on the cover. And it was just like, well, we didn't really do so hot on that on that one. And whenever a song that is like grappling with an issue comes up, I always have in the back of my mind Saying Something. And it's just really hard to pull it off. And I'm not in a place to say whether he pulled it off, but it's just as someone who loves music, this goes over a lot better than similar kinds of songs.
Correct.
So that, I think, speaks to his enormous talent and his enormous sensitivity as an artist to grapple with stuff and me not be upset that I'm like, oh, now we're in school, right?
Right, right.
Like, don't do that.
Right. The Black or the Berry.
Another just colossal,
similar theme.
Colossal beat, though.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Sorry, right.
My hand was holding the microphone.
Your mic hand
got a little. It got a little.
Done hurt my mic hand.
Done hurt my mic hand.
So yeah, a track about being proud of being an African American, then moreover just an African.
Yeah.
You know, being unapologetically proud.
Yeah.
Of black heritage,
yeah.
History, and whatnot. And, yeah, and again, you. Not really. I mean, obviously, knowing from the start that this was an album from 2015, in my head, it could have been born of 2020, you know?
Right. And that's one of, And that's
fucking 2020.
Plus, but yeah, both the sadness and the hopefulness that you know, oh my gosh, Nina Simone, if you want to talk about a track, Mississippi Goddamn.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Just a harrowing sort of cathartic angry song about the state of being black, and that was the 60s, and to sort of perform that song in that era, there's this choking rage that you can consider, because so few things, some things have changed, but not as many things as they should. Mm-hmm. And so to hear a song like this, that's again, it's also part of the tradition, right? It's just saying we need to be hopeful. Things can change. Things haven't changed as much as they ought to.
Right. You ain't gotta lie. In parentheses, mama said.
Double callback, if I have to look at my notes, but a double callback in terms of there's a Tupac sample,
uh-huh,
and then a Ice Cube.
Yes.
So just that to me is I love, talk about your 7-layer burritos of hip hop. I love when that aspect comes into play. I love the that's some of my joys of Kanye albums, especially where, you know, sonically it's just like picking apart what are these component parts, what's being referenced, what is this a callback to, what is that little, you know, vocal, mm-hmm, sample, you know, coming back to, and this album is no different in that respect.
Love the line from this one, the loudest one in the room. That's a complex.
Mm-hmm.
Yup. Ain't that the fucking truth? Take that one and roll with it. Next to last track is I. Love the upbeat nature of this one. It's nice after a little bit of a...
Well, this is what I like talking about, like Lemonade, right? To get information at the very... To get formation at the very end of Lemonade was like... incredibly cathartic, which again, it didn't, not that the song is for me, it really isn't.
It's for me.
Right. I'm not black. I'm not a woman. I'm not in formation.
We don't want you in formation.
Exactly. I'm waving. I'm being supportive. Maybe a foam finger, you know? But I felt the song better in the context of that album, because I've been through all the really down parts. And then to climb up and be like, yeah, at the end, that's how I feels, very similar in the context. Mm-hmm. He's gone through some heavy stuff, and he comes up for air, and he comes up for some hopeful moments and very up moments, but seldom. They're hard won,
right?
He really has to go through and think about it, and then he answers those doubts and questions with these really triumphant assertions that, again, are very powerfully universal.
Right.
I love myself. That's not easy.
Right. It's not easy to say. I love that it starts off kind of big and happy. Then by verse 3, he breaks down a little bit.
Right.
I'm like, this motherfucker's so brilliant. And then by verse 4, he's just rapping with no music at all.
Right. Yeah. Which, again, I think is different in the single version. I don't think the single version has the a cappella part. And
oh, yeah?
It's not presented as a sort of the live sound. I think the single is more the clean studio version, but this is the one that, again, came to Ronald Isley and that lady from the Isley Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
We could do an entire show on songs that it sampled that song, because I mean, Isley Brothers have always been a huge part of hip-hop, especially West Coast hip-hop, because they're just endlessly sampled. Their own work is incredible and multi-generational in terms of its influence, and it extends throughout hip hop. And so this is another part that is just like, yeah, it's like listening to hip hop royalty.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's aligning himself with these sort of historic, you know, black voices.
Right.
It's just awesome. It's awesome to hear that lady, which is an incredible track on its own. Not resampled, replayed. I think this was not sampled. It was, I mean, obviously it's...
This was still an I?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the backing track. That fuzzy guitar is like it's inimitable. But it was played, it was re-performed just for this track. So, there you go.
In my head, we're on track like 64 at this point.
I know.
Again, like I just said, verse 3 and verse 4.
Not
totally
over.
We get Mortal Man, a 12-minute... exit, Mortal Man.
This is incredible, because I need to. So you get the release of, mm-hmm, he finally gives you the whole poem,
right?
That you've seen in snippets and you've heard, and you're like, when's that gonna land? And well, it lands at the end. Here it is. And then.
Then he goes through an interview with Tupac.
Again, pretty ballsy conceit.
Right.
I actually want to really listen to the original interview. I know I've seen links to it that they where the original interview came from, mm-hmm. but just I'd say he pulls it off in terms of how natural and flowing it actually does sound.
Right. It's fantastic. Cool. Yeah, I didn't realize there was such admiration for Tupac, but I suppose it does make sense. West Coast makes total sense. Not to mention, not just that alone. Tupac was, as we discussed, a revolutionary man in so many ways.
Yeah.
In so many ways. So, of course, it would make sense in that regard. But in this whole track, he's comparing himself to Mandela, MLK. We're kind of like implying that he's going to be walking, like he's the new torch carrier.
Right.
For this generation. And he understands that, but he's also saying, like, understand, I have flaws. I will not be perfect. They are not perfect. None of us have been perfect, but stick with us because
yeah, I'm trying, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the legend that we've made and we're making will not be without faults. But like I remember listening to this and the line about Michael Jackson kind of gave me pause, but then that was exactly what he was talking
That's
about.
That's exactly what he was talking about.
Yeah, him being like
they're going to try and
Billie Jean.
They're going to try and tear him down in various other ways because to take anything from black culture, right? Because
right.
that's the history of popular music in America. I've said it before on this show, but popular music is black music.
Right.
We don't have popular music. I don't think I ever. I mean, I might have told you this story. I was once in Portland and I walked into a bluegrass show because someone had invited me. I've never heard bluegrass, and I hope to God I don't hear it ever again in a live context because I have never I think it's very flip. I think it's very flippant when people say, as white people, right, this sort of self-incriminating loathing kind of say, oh, that's such a white person thing to do. It's like, shut up. Like if you're white, don't do that. Like it's disingenuous. But I walked in that show and literally there were young men and women without shoes, like hoedown, like hoeing down, not hoedown.
Hoedowning?
Hoedowning. No, hoedowning
junior.
Downing hoe.
Sure.
Like there might have been hay bales. Like it was
genuinely.
I was afraid for my life. It was the most strangely disconcerting kind of experience because I was like, oh, this is what American music would be like if we did not have all of the popular forms derived from black music.
Hmm.
It was terrifying. So that's all an aside to say that's the contentious reality of black music in America is it's constantly being stolen and it's constantly both being celebrated and then undermined.
Right. Hmm. Yep.
That's my thought on that.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. No, I'm with you on that one. And it goes on for 12 minutes. It's beautiful at the end. Tupac stops responding or he's finished the, I think, isn't that right? He finishes the entire poem and then asks for Tupac and there's nothing.
Yeah.
He doesn't respond.
Yeah.
Pac. To Pimp a Butterfly.
Yeah. A masterwork. Again, third album. Get out of here.
My takeaway word is mammoth.
Yeah. Gosh. Honest, I think might be the word because mm-hmm. it's just you don't get there and go there so many times without being brutally honest,
right?
And I think that's is part of what, not the only thing, but part of what gives this work such power. So
absolutely, if you did not listen to it this week, somehow do it this week. Say you're a sensible person and you already listened to this album when it came out, give it another listen for old Lisa. You'll feel better for it. Kendrick will thank you for it. He won't thank you for it, but he'll feel good. He'll sleep better.
We mentioned it before, but also check out Kendrick Lamar's sort of interview / conversation with Rick Rubin. I love it. Just
I think
because
you just mentioned that to me. I don't think you talked about it on the show.
I think
maybe
I did.
Maybe you did. I don't sleep
point
so
is,
well.
Point is... It's great. It's great. They're both having this like secret smile, like the secrets of the universe are open to them, and in fact, maybe they are.
Yep. True that. True that. So, listen, gang. This is coming out on Friday morning, maybe Thursday night, depending. No, it's Friday morning. Screw it. We are going to not take a week off from the show, but instead of covering an album, we're going to do a drop of another playlist, and we'll do a little quick show over it as well. What are we doing? We're just going to do the stuff we're listening to?
Stuff we're listening to, just something similar to the other playlist show that's not so bum out, apparently.
I guess. You guys are so bad. Well, guess what? So are we. We take you down with us. No, we're fine.
We're fine.
We'll bring you. So that's what we'll release next week. It'll be fun, soft, easy. Fun, soft, easy.
Fun, soft, easy. The mixtape number two. Fun, soft, easy.
We'll see about that. Thank you guys for listening. That was Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly. We'll be back next week with a little fun show, and then we'll get back onto our regular routine. So thank you guys for listening, and take care.
Take it easy.